The committee is now open for business. Present is Representative Thomas.
Sorry.
Newman. And co-chairs Elkins and Gatto. We have before us a single bill, Senate Bill 300, sponsored by Senator Ralph Seekins. And in front of us today is the committee aide. Please, for the record, identify yourself and your affiliation.
Thank you, Representative. My name is Brian Hove, staff to Senator Seekins.
Oh, proceed. Yep.
All right. Before us today, we have Senate Bill 300, which alters the definition of principal balance to basically place one group of creditors on the same level playing field as another group. And I'm going to use since I'm standing in for Senator Seekins, I'll use his example of car dealership, which obviously he's very familiar with. On the one hand, he has banks and credit unions that offer his customers financing for a vehicle. And on another hand, we've got what are called acceptance companies. And in this instance, it would be companies like General Motors Acceptance Corporation, Ford Motor Credit, Chrysler Credit, and so on. The banks and credit unions are federally regulated. The acceptance companies are federally regulated, and they must also adhere to state laws.
Well, and not the banks and credit unions?
Not the federally chartered banks and credit unions.
Go ahead.
And so what that means then is that in specific instances where we have a case where a customer walks in, they've got a trade-in, they owe $9,000 on their trade-in, it's worth $8,000. That extra $1,000 can be rolled into the new deal. If you're talking about a bank or a credit union. But given the state law now, as it describes principal balance, it's difficult, if not impossible, for the acceptance companies to write a deal for that customer. Now, the concept of negative equity aside, that cat's out of the bag. What we have here is a disparity in how banks are treated and how acceptance companies are treated. When a customer walks in a dealership or any place that offers financing for their goods, they're usually better off if they have more financing opportunities rather than just limited to one group or another. Oftentimes, dealerships will send a single application out to several different lenders to see who responds back first, who responds back with the best deal, and that's the deal that the customer will get. And if you exclude acceptance companies out of that group, then what you're limited to is a smaller group of options. So state law, as it currently exists, we have an unlevel playing field is what it amounts to between acceptance companies and banks and credit unions. We just like to alter the state laws currently so that we can place these two groups on the same level playing field. Did I muddy the waters?
I don't think so.
Okay.
It's something that I don't think any of us realized, that a car dealership who makes loans has different rules than a bank or a credit union that makes the same loan to the same person for the same car. We may have assumed some things, that maybe it's cheaper to go to the bank or credit union rather than the car dealer, but I think that's something that the shopper needs to investigate him or herself. And what the Senate Bill 300 does is simply change the rules for dealers with the acceptance corporations. These acceptance corporations, they're nationwide, clearly, if you're
of course,
nationwide. General Motors, they're nationwide. While a bank and a credit union could be Alaska only. And so if the bank or the credit union was not Alaska only, but like Bank of America, would they have a different rule than First National Bank of Anchorage?
They would be governed by the same regulation. It's Regulation Z. It's a federal regulation. And so whether it's First National Bank of Alaska or Bank of America, they would have to both abide by Regulation Z.
Okay. It mentions in the sponsor statement changes to updating the definition of principal balance. Can you maybe expand on that for me?
In 45, Representative Gatto, in 45.10.030,
we have a page number and a line.
Well, I'm looking at page one first, but we'll go to page two.
There's page two, line what?
14.
Thank you.
There's several. You can see we've added an 11 here to the 10 that currently exist. These are items that must contain that the contract must indicate. So if we read this, if the retail installment contract is for the sale of a motor vehicle, the amount, if any, that the seller agrees to pay to discharge an outstanding obligation, and this would be, in my earlier example, the $1,000 difference between the trade-in value of the old vehicle versus its payoff balance, to discharge an outstanding obligation of the buyer under an existing motor vehicle agreement, loan installment, sales contract, or lease. This would be the amount that would be indicated on the contract. So it amounts to a disclosure.
Is there a fee when someone has negative equity to go ahead and essentially do what the bill wants to allow them to do?
Chair Gatto, no, there is not.
So I guess the privilege of buying a car, you're going to put everything in the price of the car and simply then allow them to turn in a car that they owe more than the value of the car. And then let's say it's $1,000. Is that now $1,000 added to the price of the car, or is it treated separately?
No, as it was explained to me in the old days, that's how they would handle the mathematics of that type of transaction, is they'd roll it directly into the price of the new vehicle. But that didn't mathematically describe the transaction. And so what this is attempting to do is to properly describe the transaction, not put that $1,000. If you're buying a $25,000 vehicle, now it's $26,000. The loan is a $26,000 loan, assuming you're 100% financing. So you got a $25,000 vehicle you're buying. You've got the negative equity, that $1,000 that is passing through onto this deal that came from the old deal. So now your loan amount is $26,000. Your principal balance, starting principal balance, is $26,000.
Representative Thomas?
Thank you. I must be confused here, but at least when I buy cars, there's always a requirement to have a down payment. Mm-hmm. How do you get that if you have a negative equity?
Through the chair, Representative Thomas, as I was kind of describing before the meeting started, when I first started in the banking business, required to, my customers had to have a 25% down payment, and the maximum term was 36 months. But because of the robustness in our economy, lenders have, are always looking for good deals. And so for good customers, they're willing. And over a period of years, they've gone from, 25% down to 10% down, now it is zero. And then what they've also done is taken the term from 36 months to 48, now it's at 72. So what that does to the math, of course, is that when you have a no down payment situation and a 72-month term, your break-even point is further on down the road than it normally would have been. Does that make sense?
Still, Mr. Chair, the down payment requirement, I mean, about two vehicles in the last 2 years and out of state even, yeah, still required a down payment. I don't think I've ever traded a vehicle, and I guess that's been my problem. I always found somebody in Alaska to sell my junk to.
It depends.
Fell apart.
Yeah, or sitting in the yard. But even going back to the first vehicle I bought in 1972, which was brand new, I paid $4,200 for it. I mean, that's nothing. I mean, nowadays that's half the down payment.
I know it.
It's 50, 60 grand for a truck now if you want to drive.
Yeah. Through the chair, Representative Thomas, there's no question. That's the way that I've purchased vehicles, except with the notable exception of my last vehicle. I didn't bother putting a down payment on it because the interest rate was so attractive. I figured I'd have it longer than, there's a little bit of risk in that. But the bottom line with respect to your question is that it depends on the lenders. It depends on how flush the economy is with cash. If you have lenders that have cash they want to lend, and they're going to, they figure they can do better on a loan basis than on a bond, investing in bonds, mm-hmm. then, that's what they'll do.
Just go ahead. Comment. Thomas, yeah. In the past, I always like to go through our own banks here in Alaska, and I think that their loans rates are like 10.5% for a vehicle. And when you leave Alaska, like we did, 6%, even if you put money down and you don't want to go to the zero interest, you want the shorter payments. But there's no way that the banks in Alaska could compete with when you leave here. And you call them. I mean, I'll call them right from the dealership. What's the interest rates today, Dick? And he says, it's still the same. It's pretty hard to walk away from 5.5% or 6%, again, depending on how much money you put down. And
certainly.
Who's offering the 5.5% or 6% outside?
Yeah, I bought my last truck in Vegas, and it was 6%. And I think a Chrysler I bought in Kenosha, Wisconsin, was even less than that.
So you have to buy from an outside dealer. You can't use an Alaska dealer and the 5%?
That was
from a bank.
Planned. Well, I like to drive when I go on vacation, yeah. So that's why we bought one car in Kenosha and come across. The last time was Vegas and drove back.
I see.
Didn't care about, again, the cost of the vehicle as much as we did convenience of driving around.
Sure.
But the interest rate, you couldn't, I like to bank in Alaska. That's, I go and see my banker. He's been my banker for 25 years, 30 years. But he can't beat that. Anyway, that's not the subject.
I've been there.
Yeah.
Of course, buying a truck in Las Vegas is a risk. Never mind. You buy it with your probably bought it with your winnings. Well, let's go to public testimony. Ed Sniffen, are you there?
Yes, I am, Chairman. Thank you.
And Ed, did you have some comments that you wanted to make for us?
Through the chair, not really. I'm here mostly to answer questions, but I just want to mention one other aspect of this bill that we think is important, and we do support this bill, and that is what happens when you trade in a vehicle and then enter into a lease is you have two separate things going on, especially if there's negative equity in the vehicle you're trading in. As soon as you trade in that vehicle and the dealer agrees to assume that extra balance and sort of add it on to the rest of the deal, he's doing two things. First, he's paying off the debt on your other vehicle. And when you pay off that debt, you're making a loan. When you make a loan, you're subject to these Regulation Z requirements that the sponsor's representative spoke about. And then when you do another transaction to lease the vehicle, a new vehicle to the customer, that's another transaction that's regulated by a whole different set of regulations called Regulation M, which is the consumer leasing transaction. So under current law, there are two sets of disclosure requirements that acceptance companies have to comply with, and this bill brings those two concepts together. So when a car dealer does a deal, he can streamline the paperwork a little better, provide one set of notice requirements. The notice is very good under both transactions, you know, to the consumer, so the consumer understands that he's buying this, leasing this new vehicle. The vehicle is for this price, which includes an amount that was, you know, used to pay off the other vehicle, and here's the interest rate, here are your payments, this is how long it's going to take you, et cetera. So that's another feature of this bill that we think is important and brings Alaska law in line with the federal requirements. But with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions the committee has. Thank you.
All right, Ed, I'm just curious. This committee has dealt with the issue of disclosure at some length with regard to purchasing cars. Is the disclosure requirement, does the disclosure requirement stipulate that the seller, or the salesman in this case, must verbally advise the buyer of any requirements, or is he able to simply pass a packet of paper across and say, we need your signature in six places?
Through the chair, that's an excellent question, and I'm not aware of any requirement that there be a verbal disclosure of anything in particular, other than the fact that the dealer is prohibited from making any misrepresentations, of course, and our Consumer Protection Act limits that. But as far as things like you know, your annual percentage rate of interest, your total payments, the financial disclosures that are required under state and federal law are all requirements that have to be in writing, and I'm not aware of anything that requires those to be made verbally during the buying or selling process.
Well, I'm going to relay something that the sponsor had told me some time ago, well before seeing this bill, and that is the difficulty of them selling a car in that it requires a small stack, and he kind of made a motion with his fingers that resembled a quarter inch, 3/8 of an inch, of papers that people had to sign. And I said, and what kind of response do you get? He said, nobody reads them. That was something that kind of made a light bulb go off for me, in that it's a lot of trust there to sign something that you want the car. You want it now. They're going to take your car, the old one you've got, and you're going to drive away in a new one. The consequences of that are, A, your payments are going up, and B, your payments are going longer, or both, but certainly not neither, unless what you're buying is a Yugo and trading in a Mercedes. But, you know, those things are very unlikely to happen. So, in your opinion, should we be, not now, but sometime, dealing with verbal disclosure in addition to written disclosure?
Chairman, that is an excellent observation, and I can't tell you how many times in my role as the consumer protection enforcer, you know, we come across situations where a consumer who just purchased a vehicle says, you know, I don't know what I was signing. You're right. There is a stack of paperwork that we have to go through. I just rely on, you know, what the dealership told me. And so I go to the dealership and I ask him, so what did you tell this customer? And, of course, the dealership will say that he did absolutely everything right. I explained everything to this person. There was no chance for misunderstanding. And, you know, the consumer is just wrong. And that's therein lies the inherent problem with verbal disclosures, is you get to these situations where it's a he said, she said kind of a battle. And as far as evidence goes in a court of law, those are difficult cases to prove. So over time, we've developed these written requirements because, you know, hey, if it's in writing, you had a chance to at least look at it and sign it. But I do understand your concern about, especially in the auto transaction, with the stack of paperwork and the sort of nonchalant attitude a lot of consumers take when they sign those papers. They want to get out of there. They want to drive away in their new car and throw anything in front of them. They're going to sign it and leave. And I recognize that issue, and perhaps that is something we can think about in the future.
Well, I'll tell you what made me think about it is sometimes we get a bill in front of us that's 20 pages, and only a certain part of it is bold. and that is it changes a number from 20 to 30 or 10 to 10 and a half. And so we go there, and I was thinking for public disclosure, maybe there ought to be at least five paragraphs, each one composed of two sentences, maybe five lines, that are cause a seller to read word for word to the buyer. And I know some buyers may just yawn, but I just have some concerns about a seller knowing he has a very eager beaver and he's dangling the keys in front of his eyes and telling him, your old car, we'll keep it, and you've got this new one. Go drive to your friend's house and smile and party and brag. And they just want to do that without a clear understanding of the morning after. And that's
why I have a wife.
For the morning after.
No, just make sure you don't do that.
To keep you from doing that. Well, Representative Thomas is indicating that they ought to go in groups of two to buy a car. Or more. Bring your kids and your uncle who's a lawyer. But, you know, we don't do that. Especially when we're just shopping and the first person that says, we're having a sale, but it ends at 4 o'clock, which is only 15 minutes from now. Boy, what an opportunity you have to get this amazing discount, and we won't even look at your car, et cetera, et cetera. Is there any, I mean, am I off on a wrong rabbit trail with regards to making a verbal disclosure, or would Senator Seacon say, listen, I've been in the car business a long time, doesn't matter?
Through the chair, I agree with all of your comments, and there may be a way we can address those in the future. Perhaps even a one-page summary sheet in bold that tells a consumer, look, you're about ready to sign a stack of papers, and here's what they all really mean, to alert the consumer that these are important documents and you need to be careful when you go through them. When you buy a house, I know I've bought a few houses in my time, and you get the same thing. Not only is it the stack of paper, but the print is so small, most people can't read them. So, I agree that the more disclosure we can have for consumers, the better, and how we get at that is perhaps an issue for another day.
Okay, and I guess I'll just end it with what I was thinking of was a sectional on every car purchase that simply on a single page had 5 points. That described what you're doing. Because, sectionals are great. First thing that maybe to go to is the sponsor statement and the sectional before you get to a really long bill. Then you know what you're looking for.
I might be able to help a little bit if I can interject.
Okay. Go ahead, Brian.
Thank you, Representative Gatto. And Mr. Sniffen can correct me if I'm wrong. Regulation Z, as it's currently written, requires that there be certain disclosures made, and in fact goes so far as to indicate on the top of a contract in a series of four or five boxes pertinent details with respect to that contract, the principal amount, the interest rate, how that translates into an APR, annual percentage rate. Mm-hmm. And in my experience on both sides of the desk, when I was in the banking business, we used to spend a lot of time with our customers at closing, making sure that they understood the deal. Because if you have a customer walk out that doesn't understand the deal, then chances are that you're going to see the customer again, and it's not going to be under the circumstances you both would like. But if you have a customer that understands what their obligations and responsibilities are and what mine are, then that's better. The only way I can really do that effectively is by verbalizing that. Now, as a customer on the other side of the desk, it's been my experience that I've had people do the same thing with me. And instead of, handing me a sheaf of papers and says, sign here, it's important that I understand what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. This last instance, a couple years back when I purchased the vehicle, that's exactly what happened there. Salesperson indicated, boom, 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 what the deal was, what the situation is in terms of the contract and so on and so forth.
Any further comments? Representative Newman?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to comment just for some committee comments. I see this bill as something that actually helps protect the consumer a little bit more by adding further information that this is exactly what's going to happen. If you bring in a car and you're selling it, instead of adding it to the price of another car, it says that the car dealer is going to pay off that loan. You know, well, that's agreed in the contract, and I just see it adding more clarity into the contract of purchasing a car.
Okay. Any more? Representative Thomas?
Yeah, just a comment. In looking at the letter from the Alaska Auto Dealers Association, I think what's getting me at support this would be the last sentence says more financing sources will economically benefit dealers and consumers, and we urge the legislature to support SB 3300. So I think anything that will help consumers, I think, is what they said. Don't buy a used car from a used car dealer. This is Ralph's. So if you want to make a motion, go on a motion, Chairman. I'll make a motion.
Well, let me go forward. Let me close public testimony, and now I'll entertain a motion from member of the committee, Representative Thomas. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Salmon has joined us some time ago, for the record. So, Representative Thomas, would you like to make the motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I make a motion that to move CS Senate Bill 300, version 24-LS1261/F from committee with individual recommendations.
Is there an objection? Seeing and hearing none, the bill moves from committee with individual recommendations. Just curious, I have
no fiscal note. Zero.
Okay, and no amendments. So thank you very much for your time and attention.
I'd like to thank the committee very much.
At this time, the Transportation Committee is adjourned.